Turned on. We got before the flood. Okay, we're going to stop right there. Maybe this didn't get you guys excited enough to get started. It's early in the morning, I understand. So, we're going to try this one more time. I know you guys can do it. We've done it many times before. So let's start from the beginning. And a little more vigor behind it. Before the flood, the flood. When everybody kind of looked away from me when I looked around. Again, we're doing much better. I see there's a little more confidence in being able to go through and recite these. Again, like we talked about before, if you just run through your mind from time to time, it makes it much easier for you to be able to bring them back to the front of your mind and recite them. If you put them on the shelf and leave them there, they're going to collect dust, the cobwebs will cover them over, and then it'll be a lot harder to bring them back up. So, 17 periods, we had the patriarchs. Again, a very easy one. Three patriarchs to remember. Jacob, okay? And we had the linking story of who? Joseph. And Joseph explains how they ended up where? In Egypt. Very good, okay? And what were the promises made by God? Nation, seed, and the land. Very good. And to whom were they made? Initially made to Abraham. Now, were these promises something that Abraham could pass on to his son? No. These were promises made by God to Abraham, and then again repeated to Isaac, his son. Very good. The sons of Jacob. Reuben. A little quiet in the back this morning. I can stand back there with you if you like, but again, let's just continue to move through them as we go through. Again, hopefully you're remembering to, throughout the week, just run through your mind. Again, we talk about the sons of Jacob. We always refer to that or kind of compare that to the tribal lands of Israel. How does that vary? What's the difference? We lose which two names? Levi and Joseph. Okay, and who are they replaced with? Manasseh and Ephraim. Okay. Again, the reason why Levi doesn't get a territorial land to themselves is because they are the priests, and the priests cannot do an effective job if they're not spread out among the people. And then because we have Ephraim and Manasseh, they count as what? The double portion attributed to Joseph. Very good. The judges. I'll come back here now. Othniel. Very good. Okay. Again, if you can first remember the names of the judges, then you can add layers and start to remember which stories are attributed to them, what were they able to accomplish during their time. But again, to try and do all that, you got to start with the basic building block of first remember who they are. Life of Christ. This is the one that's been eluding us for so long. Seven periods, which we can turn around and distinctly say, this is how we can dissect the life of Christ. It can be broken up into these seven distinct time periods. Years of preparation, early ministry, okay. By show of hands, who thinks we still need a little bit of work on that? I'm going to put up two. Again, we can get through the list, but again, you see, we don't have the same vigor with that list as we do with the list of the judges. And again, it just goes back to repetition. Again, it's not something you're going to learn overnight. It's just repeated exposure to it helps you to remember what that list is. And again, just like the list of the judges, without knowing those seven distinct periods, not saying you can't learn the life of Christ. However, it makes it a lot easier to remember where to go and find different stories, how they relate to other things later or earlier in his lifetime. 12 apostles. Peter. Okay. Very good. Now we're kind of getting right back towards the meat of the actual lesson this morning. Again, we're focusing on the life, the story of David. We've gone through the points of, we started off our study with, again, the sin between him and Bathsheba. The results of that sin were God allowed him to live, even though under the law he was called to be put to death by stoning. However, God said, you will surely live. However, through the prophet Nathan, he tells them there are certainly going to be consequences because of your actions. Again, what David did was wrong in the sight of God. It wasn't a go left unchecked. God said there will be consequences because of your actions. So again, he tells them, the sword will never depart from David's house. Trouble will arise from David's own family. His wives will be lain with openly, and then the child would die. Okay, so we've repeated this each class. Again, we're trying to remember where or what are the consequences to David's actions from his sin with Bathsheba. To this point in the text where we left off on Wednesday evening, what has already happened? The child would die. Okay, so the child died. Again, the child lived for how long? Remember, it was 7 days. 7 days David prayed on behalf of that child. Even though God already proclaimed that he would die, David still made petition on the child's behalf. He recognized his sin. He tried to pray on the behalf of that child, but again, the child in the end did ultimately die. Was a sin, who was in control of that sin? Who had the upper hand? Who had the authority in that relationship? We don't know. Again, she was called to the king. He was in the position of authority. He was the one in the position of authority at that point. So, I mean, who was she to deny David anything? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, we look at the situation and scenario. Again, we see that God allowed David to live for the reasons he let him live. Why would he put her to death? Again, it was still David was the one who initiated the sin. David was the one who brought it to fruition. It wasn't Bathsheba who looked up and desired after David, but it was David who looked down from the wall and desired after her, called her, brought her to his chamber, did what he did, and again sent her away. And then tried to, basically, when the word came to him that she was with child, that's when we saw everything kind of come undone, where he turned around and tried to lay out a plan that in his mind thought would take care of the situation, resolve the scenario, which we see ultimately did not. And again, like I said, the text tells us that David surely would not die. It didn't give us a specific reason why he wouldn't die. It just said that you will not die. Again, the child died, so as a mother losing a child, that's punishment in and of itself. She also lost her husband. I mean, again, she didn't want to lose. I mean, she was, again, to our knowledge, very happily married. But again, the situation was she lost her husband and then later lost a child. So again, that was the punishment we had to face there. Again, we know the specific details. We do not know. Maybe it'll become a time and a day when we have the ability to converse back and forth and we can find out those details later. But again, from the text and what we have, the knowledge we have from the text, we have to kind of go off of that. Does that kind of answer your question, or is that too ambiguous for you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, we see there was an exception given. Again, that exception initially given with David. And then obviously we saw, too, later, with the birth of Solomon, what did his name mean? Blessed by God. Again, we see that later God looked at that relationship between David and Bathsheba, the child that resulted of that, that second child that resulted, was one that God approved of, whereas the first one was not approved because it was an adulterous relationship, something that God did not approve of. Okay? So, to bring us up to the text, again, we left off on Wednesday evening. We looked at, we know that Absalom, also part of the list of consequences, the trouble would arise from David's own house. We saw that come to fruition with Absalom rising up against his father. Absalom had turned around and spent many years after he had been finally brought back into the city of Jerusalem. Initially, he wasn't welcomed by his father, didn't see his father's face for several years. Even once he did see the father's face, there still seemed to be a rift between the two. Absalom recognized the fact that, hey, in due time, I'm probably the one to be the next heir to be the king over Israel. But we realize from the text that Absalom was not a patient man. He spent 4 years going through and basically campaigning for the position. He spent his time out by the city gate, interceding on the people's behalf. When they came to go see David, he would step out to them and say, "Oh, how are you doing? Let me listen to your problem," and then let them know, "Hey, I hear what you're saying. The problem you have is a very sincere, deep problem. Oh, if only there was somebody appointed to be judge. If I was that judge, I would certainly listen to your problem. I would understand your problem, and I'd be able to help possibly give you a resolve for that issue." Also, the people would come. They'd recognize Absalom as being who? The son of David, who is the king of Israel at that time. They would humble themselves. They'd bow down before Absalom. And what would Absalom do in return? Did he say, "Oh, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, yeah, let me take the prey"? Instead, he reached down, pulled him up, and then treated him as a one-to-one, man-to-man, or individual-friend relationship. He said, "Don't do that. I'm just like you." Again, in doing all these things, Absalom was able to steal away what? The hearts of the people. Again, when you talk about politics and positions, how do you get into a position? Typically by gaining the favor, by gaining the hearts of the people. If you get them to like you, that pushes you up to the front, okay? It's not necessarily that person that's in the office is always the best person for the office, but they are the one who are able to convince people that they were the best person for that position. Absalom spent his time campaigning, spending his time convincing the people that he was a great man. He was able to do that. Remember, he also had 50 people that were responsible for doing what? They were runners to do what? Announce his coming. As he was coming through town, as he was coming away through the streets, 50 people went ahead of him proclaiming, "Absalom is coming, Absalom is coming." If you have that many people announcing your arrival, that must mean that somebody coming is probably somebody of importance. So again, he put a lot of things in place to put himself in the position where when the time came, just like when he had the ability to react to the sin of Amnon and finally waited after 2 years, he reacted. We see the same thing here. He waited for 4 years after he had a very strained relationship with his father. He gained the hearts of the people, and as a result, he was able to rise up against his father. Had David done anything wrong? Was he a bad king? Was he a terrible king? Did he oppress the people? No. David did everything right. Again, set aside the sin of Bathsheba. But again, as far as leading the people, he led the people in the ways of God. He directed their attention towards God. He was a godly man. However, Absalom won their affection. And by doing that, he knew he had enough support behind him to allow him to have the ability to, again now, rise up against David and unseat him as the king and take over as the king. You can't do that when you have a king that's already in place that people like without the support of the people. Again, with the support of the people, he knew the time was right, and Absalom acted on that. When the news came to David that Absalom had risen up against him, was this something that left David and his household a lot of time to prepare? Did David know this was coming? I mean, yes, the Nathan prophet had told him this trouble would arise, but again, you don't know exactly. It wasn't spelled out in detail what was going to happen. He just knew that trouble would arise. Absalom is coming, and he's coming to take over your kingdom. So what does David do? Gathered up all of his household. Initially, he was intending on taking his closest people with him to lead the city. As he left the city, what did David realize? He really wasn't all that alone. David still had a lot of supporters that went with him. people that were not even of that country, of that nation, people that David had relationship with as far as interaction with other kings, they fought along with them. He said, why are you coming along with me? He told Ittai, why are you following me? This is not your battle. This is not your trouble. Please go back. Turn back and stay in Jerusalem. He said, no, wherever you go, I will go. Whatever the consequences is for you, I'm along with you. I support you wholeheartedly. He continued out the city. He realized, he sat there and watched as the people passed by. Again, Absalom had won the support of the people, but again, there was still a big support, big high-level support for David. As he left out of the city, as he walked out of Jerusalem and through the Kidron Valley and out towards Mount Olives, were the people standing on the sides clapping, hey, he's out of here. We can't wait for Absalom to show up. No. What was the reaction of the people? They wept. David wept. The people wept. Again, they realized the situation was not a good, wholesome situation. They still longed for David as the king. However, again, there was enough majority support with Absalom that he thought the time was right for him to make his move. David left out. He left behind his ten of his concubines to look after the house, the palace. The rest of his household left along with his supporters. Who else came out to go with him? Zadok and Abiathar. And their responsibilities were what? They were the priests. So they came carrying what? The Ark of God. They brought the Ark of God with them out of the city. They said, wherever King David's going, that's where we need to go. Did David allow them to come along with him? No. David said, you need to go back. The Ark needs to remain in the city. Again, if God wills that I should return, I will return. If God does not will for me to return, it is what it is. I accept the consequences. Again, he still has fresh in his mind the sins that he committed with Bathsheba. David was not without blemish. He was a godly man, but he was not without blemish. He knew that his consequences would require him to have certain punishments against him. But no, you stay, Zadok and Abiathar, please stay in the city. You will be my, what was the word he used? Spies, seers. I want you to stay there. Whatever you see, whatever you hear, things will be said. I need for you to turn around and send your two sons out to me to convey, communicate to me what exactly is going on in the city. I'm not going to be there. I need to know how to appropriately act or react to certain situations. What is the best way for me to retain my kingship? David was leaving in a hurried fashion, very much so that he had to kind of leave. He didn't pack a lot of food and things to sustain him. He was walking barefoot as he left the city. But again, he still had enough mind to him where he knew certain things had to be accomplished. So again, he started sending back people to be his spies. Who else came out to him? He had Zadok and Abiathar, and then who was one of the other counselors came out to him? Hushai came out. Now, we already learned that one of David's most trusted counselors by the name of, can't say it right here, somebody else. What was the name of the other counselor that David had been aware of that had joined forces with Absalom? Also began with an A. Ahithophel. Very good. Ahithophel, again, was somebody that was not new to David's camp or his council. This is someone that David had looked to for time and time again for wisdom and understanding. David was a wise man, but he also recognized that having other people around him who were very wise to give counsel was a very good thing. So as a result, his counsel, Ahithophel's counsel, was always taken with high respect. He gave wise counsel. It was received wisely by David. But when he found out that now Ahithophel is siding with Absalom, how does that make David feel? Again, it kind of puts another little jab in his side. It weakens him that much more because, again, he doesn't have Ahithophel there to give him counsel. He's now on the other side. But now along comes Hushai, and he says, well, I'm going to go along with you. Now, when we look at, we describe, we see the characteristics of Hushai, we know that he is a very aged man. So again, David says, if you come along with me, you'll be nothing but a burden. Does that mean that David didn't want him in his presence? That David was despised? He said, get away from me, Hushai. Don't bother me at this time. I don't have time for you. You're just dragging me down. That's not. Again, what was David's plan for Hushai? He had Zadok and Abiathar already in there to listen to the spies. Now he had Hushai to be the person to be there to help counteract Ahithophel's counsel to Absalom. Again, Ahithophel, nothing's ever described of Ahithophel saying he had unwise counsel. Everything described him as being very wise. How do you counteract that? You send somebody else in there who can also give counsel, but hopefully counteract what Ahithophel says, and we'll see that later in the text. David's still traveling out of the city. Meanwhile, Absalom and his people are coming into the city. David makes it out over the crest of Mount Olives. Again, going along sad. Who else does he come by? Ziba. Ziba is the servant of... This is the one that gave me tongue twice. Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was who? The grandson of Saul, Jonathan's son. Okay? We'll read more into this later, but again, we see that Ziba, the servant that's in charge of Mephibosheth's belongings, he brings out donkeys, food, water, drinks, stuff, everything that they need to help sustain them as they leave out of the city. And then David asks, where is your master? Now, again, from the text and what David has to go off of at this point, what Ziba reveals to him is saying, oh, well, Mephibosheth decided to stay behind because he's now realizing that what? It is now his time to come back into his ability to be king. The kingdom is going to be returned to the household of Saul. Okay? So as a result, David listened to this. Again, he's in a very hurried state, going off the information he has. He appoints Ziba over the belongings of Mephibosheth, but we'll learn more about that later. He moves further on down. Who's the next character we run into? Shimei. He comes out. Did he come to offer his support to David? No. He was also of the household or of the side of who? Of Saul. And how did he treat David? Very, very poorly. He cursed him, threw rocks at him, kicked dust at him. He didn't just come out and make a statement known and then turn around and went back to his home. He followed him all along the way, constantly cursing him, telling him, you're worthless, you're a man of bloodshed, this that's coming upon you is due to you. You had it coming, now it's time for us to revel in your sorrow. What to do with this guy? What should they do with this guy? They knew what they should do with him. What was the suggestion? Who is this guy to talk to you like this, David? Let's go over there and do what to this dead dog? Cut off his head. What was David's reaction? Yeah, I'm fed up with it. I can't take anymore. I'm in a poor situation. Just get him done. Get rid of him for me. Is that what David said? He said what? Who are you, sons of Zariah, to bring on more turmoil? Again, David recognized the fact that he had trouble in his household. He had troubles from within his own household. He recognized the fact that, again, the Lord may very well have been carrying out his punishment against David. We talked about earlier, David was not without blemish. The Lord could have been very well acting upon David, giving him the punishment for his actions. So again, David couldn't say with certainty, well, there's no way God would act against me like this. I'm his chosen. I'm his anointed. Again, David was a godly man, but also still a very humble soul. He relied upon God. He didn't return away from God, but again, he also accepted whatever fate God put upon him. They press along. He makes his way, and where was he going to hide? They left out of the city of Jerusalem, made their way towards the Jordan Valley to hide where? Where did he tell Zadok and Abiathar he was going? To go hide in the fords of the valley. We look at the topographical map, we realize again, here down the bottom, we got the Dead Sea, the Sea of Galilee up to the top, Jerusalem being somewhere up in this area right about here. Is it nice flat ground, nice even prairies with soft grass to walk through? No. Again, this was a very rough terrain for them to be able to walk, to get through, again, without being well prepared. They had to leave out as quickly as possible to, again, preserve their own beings, their own lives. They make their way down towards the fords of the valley. They figure if they can get down to this area, It's easy enough for David to hide. It gives him the ability to kind of seek refuge for a short while, for him to collect his thoughts and figure out what's the next plan of attack. How do I proceed from here? Now we pick up in verse 2 Samuel chapter 16. Again, we had Hushai was told by David to go back to the city. David even told him, when you go back to the city, I know for sure that Absalom is going to question, why are you here? Why are you not with my friend, your friend David? He tells him exactly what to tell him. Verse 15, we have, again, the scene has been set. David has made his way past Mount Olives, heading down towards the Jordan Valley, escaping from Absalom. As what, meantime, Absalom and his people are coming in from the other side, from the east, I believe it is, coming in, entering into the city, and now we have, or from the south, and then Hushai comes in from the east, and it says, now it came about when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, that Hushai said to Absalom, long live the king, long live the king. Again, Hushai had just been in the presence of the king. But David told him, go back to the city and tell him this. Long live the king. Absalom said to Hushai, is your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend? He has already questioned his mind. Why are you here? Why are you not with my father David, your friend? He calls into question, but again, Hushai turned around and says, no. Playing into the pride of Absalom, he turns around and tells him, no, for whom the Lord, had the Lord appointed Absalom? At this point, was Absalom appointed by God? No, absolutely not. But again, he plays into his ego. For whom the Lord, this people, the people around you have all selected you, Absalom. And all the men of Israel have chosen, his will I be, and with him I will remain. Besides, whom shall I serve? Should I not serve him, or serve in the presence of his son? As I have served in your father's presence, so I will be in your presence. So again, he's saying, my place is here in the city. My place is to be here to provide counsel, wise counsel to the king. You, my dear friend, have been selected as king by the people and by God. And all this just plays right into Absalom's ego. He says, yes, I'm making the right decision. I'm doing the right thing. Everything's falling right into place, just as I had hoped. I did win over the hearts of the people, even stealing away, again, his father's wise counselors. Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, give your advice, what shall we do? Now they're in the city. They found out that they're ready for battle, but there's no battle to be had. David and his men have already left. What do we do now to further secure my place as king over Israel? Ahithophel, you're a wise man. What's your advice? What do we do now? How do we continue to further secure me as being king? Ahithophel said to Absalom, go unto your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house. Then all Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious to your father. The hands of all who are with you will also be strengthened. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all of Israel. Is Ahithophel's, is his counsel wise? Now think about it. For what they're trying to accomplish, is Ahithophel's counsel wise? Not in sight of God, but for the purpose of what they're trying to accomplish, his counsel is extremely wise. Go in and mark your territory. Your father left behind his concubines. They're your concubines now. You take them. You take them as your own. Show all of Israel there's no turning back. At this point, the line's been drawn. And what he's done, he cannot turn back from. Now, Ahithophel, there's a lot of wisdom in that because, again, it shows that Absalom is fully and wholly committed to what he is doing. He isn't half-hearted about his attempt. He's going in with all of his effort and all of his mind and all of his heart to take over as king. But also, it shows the people who see this, they're a witness to what's going on, they say, he's not turning back. He's going full force forward. There's nothing... He is serious about this. He must have a chance. He must be doing the right thing. So now he's gaining even more favor of the people. The people are recognizing that this is a very serious force. It's not just a bratty kid rejecting his father, acting out against his parents. Again, he is an adult making a wise decision in the sight of Ahithophel and himself, but again, a wise decision to accomplish the task he set out to do, which is to, again, upseat his father as the king over Israel. The advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, as if one inquired the word of God, was all the advice of Ahithophel regarded by both David and by Absalom. Again, the counsel that Ahithophel gave was never questioned. It was very wise. And again, David recognized that, and Absalom also recognized that. Again, why do you think Absalom worked so diligently to get him on his side? Because if Ahithophel wasn't there giving him advice, he would be giving advice to who? He would be giving advice to David. Again, he knew that would be working against him. So again, by acquiring Ahithophel as one of his counselors, he's further strengthened his cause towards becoming king. Furthermore, Ahithophel said to Absalom, please. So again, it didn't stop there. That was just the beginning. He says, now we need to do more. We need to further this cause. We need to act quickly. Please let me choose 12,000 men that I may rise and pursue David tonight. He didn't say, let's sit around and think about it and make out some more plans. He said, let me choose 12,000 men. We'll pursue them tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and exhausted, terrifying him so that all the people who are with him will flee. Again, think about what he is saying and think about the result that it will be accomplished if he does follow after Ahithophel's suggestion, his counsel. He said, they will flee, then I will strike down the king alone. And I will bring back all the people to you. The return of everyone depends on the man you seek. Then all the people will be at peace. Now think about what he's told him. Let me grab 12,000 choice men. Let me grab these men. We need to pursue after David. Has David made his great distance? He's out of sight. But again, remember the terrain. He's only made his way over the Mount Olives, making his way down towards the fords of the Jordan Valley. He still is only within miles. However, let me pursue him now. They're weary. They're unsure. They don't have a battle plan at this point. We've already had the element of surprise. We've already had the element of being able to concoct this plan all this long. Now let us continue to follow through and accomplish the task we set out to do. When we get there, we're going to surprise them so badly that all the men with him, those who are his supporters at that point, are going to flee for their own lives, leaving King David to himself, and we'll strike him down and him alone. And we're going to bring the other people back. And we're going to do that so that there's peace. Again, we're not going to continue to try and pursue everybody and kill everybody. We want them as part of the kingdom as they once were. We just want them to understand that Absalom is king, no longer is David. Again, as long as David is alive, he's always going to be a threat to the seat of the kingdom, to Absalom. Very wise counsel on the behalf of Ahithophel. Again, think about it. David was somebody that was a wise fighter. He could concoct a plan. He could go to battle. He won battles. Even in great adversity, he always came out on the upper hand. God was with him. Who's God not with? God was not with Absalom. Ahithophel had very wise counsel. Go and we've got him on the ropes. We need to finish him off. Again, you've got him stumbling back. We've got him on the run. We must finish this now and do it as quickly as possible. So the plan pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. Then Absalom said, now call Hushai the Archite also and let us hear what he has to say about this matter. Again, says, well, what's better than one counselor? Two counselors. I've got Ahithophel. He's a wise man. But let's see what Hushai has to say about the matter as well. So they called him in. They explained to him. When Hushai came, Absalom said to him, Ahithophel has spoken thus. Should we carry out his plan? If not, you speak. So now really this is the ability for Hushai to kind of prove his wisdom, to prove his worth. Which side is he on? He's on David's side, but Absalom's still not sure about that, is he? So he's seeking his counsel. He's got very wise counsel on one hand with Ahithophel. He's got to come up with something really good to prove otherwise. What he tells him is going to, again, reveal his true colors. Hushai proceeds to tell him a plan or tell him why this plan is not good, but the way he goes about it, the wisdom behind how he describes it, again, still to Absalom's ear, sounds like he favors Absalom, with the ultimate goal being defeating David. But again, what Hushai is trying to do is, again, counteract the wise counsel. When he heard the counsel of Ahithophel, he recognized it as being wise. He knew that it could not happen. If it did, it would surely mean the death of David. He gives him his counter counsel. So Hushai said to Absalom, this time, the advice that Ahithophel has given is not good. You like how he starts that one out? He didn't say, don't listen to him. He's crazy. He's off his rock. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He says, he recognized that Ahithophel always gave wise counsel. So as a result, he said, this time his counsel wasn't all that wise. And he goes on to explain why. Moreover, Hushai said, you know your father and his men, that they are mighty men and they are fierce, like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Your father is an expert in warfare and will not spend the night with the people. Again, is this anything that would have slipped Absalom's mind? Did he know who his father was? What his father had accomplished? Everybody knew who David was. The accomplishments. David had a long career serving the God of Israel. And as a result, he had many battles. He went up against people. But again, his wisdom and the people who were with him were such, again, the way he described it, a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Is that someone you want to mess with? No. Again, David may have been injured in the sense that he was removed from his city on the run, but again, David was not without his power. David was like a bear robbed of her cubs, and again, the people who were with him, again, they're all experts in warfare. Behold, he has now hidden himself in one of the caves in another place, and it will be when he falls on them at first attack, that whoever hears it will say, there has been a great slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. You send your people out. That's fine. Go ahead. Send them out. But what happens? They get out there. They're going to see this mass of people. But you know what? David's smart. He's hiding in a cave somewhere else. You're going to fall on the people. Even if you take control of them, if one of your men falls, they're going to come back with the news of what? You didn't get David, and one of your men or some of your men have died or perished as a result of that. What does that do to your plan? Does that provide power, authority, commitment to your plan? Or does it start to get the people thinking, maybe he doesn't really have a chance? Again, he's putting a little bit level of doubt, a certain level of doubt in the mind of Absalom. So again, there's been a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. And even if one who is valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will completely lose heart, for all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant men. Again, telling Absalom the things he already knows about his father. Bear in mind, the counsel of Ahithophel was extremely wise and should have been acted upon, taken into. That's what they should have done. But again, Hushai puts in a very wise argument to counteract the counsel of Ahithophel. By counsel, all Israel will be surely gathered to you, from Dan even to Beersheba. Again, get all the people. This is your kingdom now. Bring them all together. Again, playing into his ego that you're the one now in charge. As the sand that is by the sea is in abundance, and that you personally go into battle. Go ahead. Go out to the kingdom. Bring in all the valiant men of the kingdom. They're going to come. They're all here to support you. They're going to be like the sand on the seashore. Countless. You go out with them. Show them that you're a leader. Again, playing into his ego. He's feeding into it the whole time. So we shall come into him in one of all the places where he can be found, and will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground. And of him and of all the men who are with him, not even one will be left. A little bit different counsel than what he was given by Ahithophel. Ahithophel told him, you go after him now, take David, take him by surprise, kill him and kill him alone. Hushai tells him, hey, you've got David, you've got his supporters that are with him. They're David's supporters. If you don't kill them, they're always going to be a thorn in your side. They're valiant men, men of warfare. If you don't remove them, you're always going to have trouble. If he withdraws into a city, then all Israel shall bring ropes to that city, and we'll drag into the valley. Not even one small stone is found there. Again, even if David runs into a city, a walled city, to be protected, we're going to have such support. We're going to have such manpower. We're going to tear that city down to the ground and drag it down into the valley, into the river. There'll be nothing left there. There's nothing that he can do to stop us from attaining David. That's what our hearts set out to do, and that's what we're going to accomplish. This is the counsel of Hushai. So then Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel, so the Lord might bring calamity on Absalom. Again, if the Lord wanted Absalom to be appointed as king, would there be anything to stop Absalom from becoming king? No. Absalom was not appointed of the Lord. As a result, the Lord was on the side of David. Things were put in place. We see this starting to all kind of come into fruition now. He sent back his spies. He sent back his counselor. Everything. Again, this is still a very short period of time. A lot has happened. A lot has happened. A lot of worries on David's heart. A lot of emotions are being felt. A lot is happening all in a very short period of time. But again, we see that again, the Lord is on the side of David. And Hushai said to Zadok, the Abiathar, the priest, this is what the Ahithophel counseled Absalom and the elders of Israel, and this is what I should have. This is what I have counseled. Now, therefore, send quickly and tell David, saying, do not spend the night in the fords of the wilderness, but by all means cross over, or else the king and all the people who are with them will be destroyed. Again, leaving nothing to chance. He has changed the heart and the mind of Absalom, saying, this is the better counsel. Absalom agreed. However, minds are left to be changed. So again, if Absalom could be convinced by Ahithophel later to say, no, you should really do this instead, this is how we'll gain victory, and he acted on that, then David surely would have fell. He left nothing to chance. He turned around, sent out the two sons of Abiathar and Zadok, said, tell them this counsel. This is what was said. This is what I counteracted with. You must cross over the river tonight. You must, don't rest at all. Move across the river. Seek security on the other side of the Jordan Valley. That's the only way you're going to preserve your life. Now, Jonathan and Ahimaaz were staying in En-Rogel, and a maidservant would go and tell them, and they would go back and tell King David, for they could not be seen entering the city. Again, being wise about their movements, recognizing that Absalom had his supporters as well, looking, again, for the supporters of David. But a lad did see them and told Absalom, so two of them departed quickly, came to the house of a man in Bahurim, who had a well in his courtyard, and when they went down, and they went down into it. And the woman took a covering, spread it over the well's mouth, and scattered grain on it so that nothing was known. So again, they were hidden from the sight of Absalom's supporters who came seeking them out. As much as I'd like to continue on, time is not on my side. So, we're going to conclude here for this morning, and we'll pick up from the story on Wednesday evening. Thank you.